Kenobi debuts its fourth episode in the series. We give you our review and our reactions about the series so far. Talks on the block is that there's going to be a second season coming relatively soon. And we ask the important question of, where the hell is the next Star Wars movie? All that and more here on Chatooine. Welcome back to Chatooine, everyone. I'm your host, Star Wars Only, joined with Darth Daddy Lunga and the Goldman. If you guys are new here, please leave a like, comment, and subscribe. You know, hit up the Chatooine channel. Follow us on Spotify if you want to listen to this in a podcast later. And just engage with us in the stream. Leave us some thoughts. Might be trying to take this back to the Star Wars Only channel in the next couple weeks because of how popular Star Wars is getting. And we want to grow things a little bit. So give us some feedback. Let us know how you guys are doing, and what you guys want to see from this beautiful and great podcast. Palp Memes is yet again bench pressing right now, and so he can't make it here, but that's okay. We'll work out our schedules in the near future. But, you know, we're four episodes in. Two more left, and I can't help but feel like I am right back where I was with the Book of Boba Fett at the end of... Hang on.
You're crazy.
I know I am, but when we had two episodes left in the Book of Boba Fett, I remember thinking, like, you got to show me something to make this series feel worth it. And at the moment, that's kind of how I feel about Kenobi as a series and as a whole. But I know I'm wrong at the same time. But I mean,
are you watching it with the sound off, hanging upside down, looking at it in a mirror? Is that how you
watch
it?
No. I'm watching both.
This is really unprecedented that me and Lunga are the ones that share the opinion, and then you are the one that disagrees. This is really unprecedented.
It's not even a hard disagreement. It's just I know you guys saw my tweet earlier about like me feeling like the show is underwhelming so far, and I just feel like I know, and I appreciate it. It's just with a show like this, I feel like a character like Kenobi. I feel like I expected more because when I see chapter one, or they call it part one, the first episode, part one, I'm like, okay, this is kind of what I expect from the series. Then I see part two and I'm like, oh, okay, this is a little odd. All right, whatever. And it feels like part two and part four, the episode that came out today, are kind of the same thing. If, you know, Leia gets captured and we got to go find her and, you know, help her and yada, yada, yada. But part three, I genuinely enjoy. I rewatched that again this morning. And, you know, I understand the complaints of the volume and it looking a little bit like a fan film. But for the most part, I still genuinely enjoyed one and three. Two and four, for some reason, I just didn't really sit well with me. And so today, of course, we're talking about episode four. Lunga, I know you're enjoying it. I know you watched it today as well, like, you know, in the past 8 hours. How do you feel about this episode four so far?
I do have some minor complaints, you know, because I did make a whole video talking about Leia doesn't really know he's Obi-Wan, which I go, unless they do something different, which they did. She definitely knows he's Obi-Wan Kenobi. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with that. I'm a little on the fence with that part. But the show itself, this is where I disagree. The moment you say Boba Fett, like Boba Fett, I know there's specific things when you're saying that. But for me, the first thing I think of is zero story progression. That is not happening here. This story is progressing episode by episode. Yes, is there a little repeat? She was captured, did a chase, and then now captured again? Sure. But the story is progressing. The reasons things are happening for a reason, and I can feel that movement moving up. I love the opening where you could see, and this, I think they're doing this for that, the complaint people have, the old complaint about how, you know, I haven't felt this since, and people are like, it's supposed to be Mustafar, it's not supposed to be this stuff. But if you see the connection that Obi-Wan and Anakin seem to have every time back to tanks or healing or whatever's going on, and they're tied into the Force, they're kind of sharing these Force feelings, you know. Maybe it doesn't make Goldman happy. Maybe it's a dyad, Goldman? Is that maybe what we got going on?
The dyad is special for Rey and Kylo. Prior to that, maybe Revan and Baslub. Besides that,
there you go. But they do have a connection, and it's awakening with the, you know, what's happening in these series, and they're sharing feelings. That's what's happening. Like those, like the prequel scenes in the whatever first episode, I think it was, or the second one, when he's having the dreams and he saw Anakin in the he wasn't there because those were Anakin's. Because we saw Vader in a back of the tank too when that was happening. He was seeing Anakin's vision, so they're like sharing these visions like through the Force with each other about the past and their connection. So I really love that setup. I think I was critical of Moses, her acting and her line delivery in the first couple episodes. It's getting better. I felt she did a good job in this episode as well. I thought the episode was great even before spoiler guys, before Vader showed up. It was great already before that. So this isn't like a Rogue One issue where the people are like, oh, when Vader came, then suddenly it got great. It was good already for me. And then when Vader got there, it was like, yes, dude, he came in, grabbed her mid stride. It was spectacular, that scene. I loved it. The Leia thing, I get why they're doing it. Okay. It's because she got away and now they're using her or the, you know, Lola to keep following Obi-Wan because Reva fucked up. That's the point. Is they're supposed to show us Reva fucked up. And one of the biggest moments for me, and I don't know if a lot of people caught this, Goldman might have, when she was interrogating Leia, you could see the projection of her feelings as a child and what she felt after Order 66 onto her. And when she got that frustrated when Leia wouldn't give in, it was because she did. She, you know, they probably gave her similar lines and she was like, you know, easily swayed away from the Jedi and to the dark side and becoming an Inquisitor because she was so angry, right? Which just leads to the dark side. Leia doesn't have that anger. So she didn't fall that way, but she's still defiant. Like, no, I'm not giving anything. I'm not giving you information. This, that. And Reva's frustration was because I really felt to me that was a projection of what she did when she was a child and frustrated at Leia for not giving information and at herself for like, why is this little girl so much stronger than I was at that age to where I easily went over? Because we see there's a redemption arc coming for her. And prediction time. Either the Grand Inquisitor or Vader is going to kill her. She's not going to make it out of the series.
I think it'll be Vader. Someone put something about like she's going to like spare Luke. One of my friends said that she's going to like spare Luke or something like that and have the option to kill him. And she doesn't, which I will say if that happens, I will be annoyed because it does seem like she is the reason.
Luke has nothing to do with this. It's Leia. She's going to save Leia or save Obi-Wan or help both of them get away.
And then the punishment for that would be death by Vader, which I'm fine with. Like if she dies by Vader's hand, that adds to him as like a villain and everything.
Yeah. And we've seen that in the Vader comics over and over and over again now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's weird to me that like she still even knows who he is because I thought in the comics it was mostly people like who had to figure it out pretty much. But I mean, they're probably going to reveal there's going to be a big Reva reveal. And that's what the interesting about it having two more episodes is that it's either going to happen in the next one or in the finale. And
we're going to get really a 15, curious. 20 minute info dump on her backstory. Oh,
God, I don't want it that long.
I don't think so.
Now, the Leia knowing Obi-Wan to me, I'm like, oh, I got to see how to handle this. Okay. I got to see what they're going to do. Like I said, one of the things I said that someone said in the chat here is they could do a Jedi mind wipe. That's a possibility for her to forget all this.
Yeah.
But the one big pet peeve I had from this episode was when they were escaping and he had her next to him. He has this gigantic lump on his right hip. It looked like when the kids are both in their father's trench coat and they're like piling up on top of each other. And he's got his feet and these two little feet. And there's hundreds of people in his docking bay and no one notices it. That really struck me. And I'm like, why is this happening? Why? I don't understand. This doesn't make any sense here. This seems like they couldn't think of any other way. And it's like, let's just do this. When it's like, there could have been a million ways that he could have snuck her out without it being that obvious. That felt like a ball drop to me. But other than that, there wasn't, you know, much that I disliked. I thought it was a well episode. Three is still my favorite, but I thought it was better than one and two.
Ooh, you thought it was better than the first one?
Yeah.
What?
That's one I kind of have, because the first one to me feels like we're, It's the one that I would expect the most from Kenobi, where it has a lot of impact. It looks the most like a movie, in my opinion. The third one I really like because of his interactions with Vader and even like escaping and like the kind of like Underground Railroad type of symbolism they have and the Quinlan Voss reference. Yeah, the path, like that stuff I found very interesting. This one, though, I mean, to me, this one was a sleeper. Like I could skip this entire episode and probably not. I mean, depending on what happens in the next one, probably not have much of an impact other than, oh, there's a tracker on Lola. But I could be wrong. I mean, we'll have to
see. What about all the Jedi entombed in there? In that amber?
That was very cool. Hey, was the first one the guy with the, like the silver, the old timer from the Clone Wars who taught like the?
That's what someone in my chat said.
There was one of them
that was Ahsoka, the one who like.
Remember the episode? I think Ahsoka lost her lightsaber, and the old dude had to help her. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he has like a silver lightsaber, and it's one of the coolest fucking ones you'll ever see.
And the one who had like that poncho on,
Eric Sanube.
It's happened almost around the same time. Jedi Fallen Order is happening around the same time as this. If you do the math,
no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Fallen Order happens way before.
No, before. He was a Padawan in Order 66, and he's like 19 in Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, I thought it was 10 years after.
It's almost Fallen like Order, the exact same thing as Reva.
Fallen Order was 5 years after Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, this you're right. No. Yeah, it's the sequel, Jedi Survivor. That's going to be during the same time as Kenobi. Wait a minute.
His character in the game as a grown was like 19, wasn't he?
Cal?
Yeah.
I guess
he wasn't 15,
but if
it's 5 years later, he'd be like 15 because he was like a 12-year-old in Order 66.
During Order 66, he was 12. Coming from Screen Rant, it says Cal was only 12 years old during the Purge.
Okay, that's why
around 17 during the game.
Okay, so that's out of 5 years. Okay, so that makes sense. 17, I could see, and if he was 12, he was older than I thought. So yeah, 5 years. Okay, so it was before. What's the character's name that was helping him, the woman,
Siri Junda.
Yeah, the one they showed with the poncho on really looked like her to me.
I didn't buy that one.
Most likely not be, but she really looked like her to me. And the one with the long hair looked like the one at the very beginning who died trying to save the Padawans. I'm definitely gonna have to watch some Easter egg ones because I know somebody figured them all out there. So I'm going to see if I can find some Easter egg videos for this.
All right, Goldman, what did you think? I'm curious on your take because I don't think I've seen. I mean, you gave me a ratio on Twitter for saying that the series is underwhelming. Is that a reflection of your opinion on this episode?
No. So overall, I guess I'll give my brief thoughts on the series as a whole. I love the first and third episodes. At first, I was a little harsh on the third episode, but it definitely grew on me on a second rewatch. I like the second episode a lot. And I didn't really love it. And this episode was just really mediocre, which is I'm completely baffled. There's like a outrage that this whole show sucks because one episode wasn't great. I know a lot of people don't share that sentiment, which is fine. But for me, this episode was just fine. I think I have two problems with this episode as to why it wasn't as great as some of the others. The first is that they take every standard Star Wars rescue mission trope that has existed in the franchise and they play it to the extreme in this episode. So like it begins, you know, oh, they somehow have a map of the place they need to go. Then they manage to secretly, they have one person that goes undercover secretly as an Imperial, whether it be a stormtrooper or an officer. Then they do the classic thing where someone who's just doing their job questions the officer, and then the officer is like, oh, I am secretly your superior. If you don't let me in, I'm going to tell Lord Vader on you. Like, I hate
that's
that trope.
In every movie, though, Goldman. It's not even this. Yeah, okay, fine. Every World War II movie ever made.
That may be the case, but I still hate that trope. If I'm doing my job and someone's like, I'm going to tell Lord Vader on you, I'm like, okay, tell Lord Vader. I'm just doing my job. If he kills me, then that would suck, but probably not. You probably have a better chance of killing me if I just let you through. And then someone manages to secretly enter the base in a unfairly, ridiculously easy way. They rescue the person or item in question, and then they manage to escape in a fairly easy way with really no consequences. So that's basically what happened here. And then they played a bunch of things to the extreme, like Obi-Wan's walking through a bunch of hallways and he sees no one. Or like, he sees the probe droid and he's hiding around corners. And then as they're escaping, that's when people see him. So then he and Leia have to fight. I thought seeing Obi-Wan fight with the lightsaber was cooler, especially when he was holding the glass together. That was like a Fallen Order call. There's a lot of little Fallen Order callbacks to me.
Well, like Kyra says, Kyle already broke into the fortress, but they somehow have worse security since then, which is funny. Yeah,
that's my thought. I was like, there's a lot of Fallen Order references here, but you'd think that Fortress Inquisitorius would have better security. So I had that same thought, which is hilarious. And then, you know, I totally agree with Longa with hiding Leia in the coat. That was obnoxious. I was like, okay, at some points with these rescue missions, you have to suspend your disbelief. Like, oh, I guess, you know,
that took me out of it.
I guess Han, Luke, and Leia could easily just walk away, survive. You know, Han could confront a bunch of stormtroopers, shoot them, and they would all somehow manage to miss him. Like, we have to suspend our disbelief there. But this just took a little too far. So then Reva catches up to them. Then, of course, like right at the right time, the snow speeders, I guess the same model, I don't know what the model name is, show up and save Obi-Wan and Leia and Tala. No, is it Tara? Tala? I always forget her name.
I don't care.
Tala.
C-A-L-A. Okay. Yeah. And then I don't know why a lot of people are memeing this dude, Wade. It's like, oh, rest in peace, Wade, the guy who died in the other snow speeder. And then a lot of people are complaining that Vader was too kind to Reva, that he should have killed her. He's like, oh, Vader would have killed her even if, regardless of whether or not he knows, she put a tracker on Lola. I was like, didn't Vader do the exact same thing in New Hope, where Vader put a tracker on the Falcon, so the Falcon he let the Falcon leave so they can find the Rebel base, and Reva put a tracker on Lola, let them escape so they could find their secret Jedi base.
Understand is that this implies that Vader only did this because he learned it from Reva, a strong, independent black man.
If you make that connection, then you're just like something else. That means you're looking. You are the one with an agenda. You are the one with an agenda. If you think that's the problem,
yeah, true.
Oh no, yeah. F in the chat.
I mean, Star Wars only has been leaning a certain way. He's been agreeing with a lot of people lately.
You make me hate myself.
So that was my first overall complaint, and there was nothing in particular besides maybe hiding Lando coat that was really bad to me. It's just like, oh, they're doing this trope. Oh, they're doing this trope. Oh, they're doing this. It's kind of predictable. And the other, I guess, maybe problem is that this was the first episode that really didn't progress Obi-Wan as a character. There's no real character moments for him. He kind of just shows up, rescues Leia, and leaves. Like, there was the moment where he tried to use the Force, but besides that, there was no like deep moments. Each of these previous three episodes, there were some great moments that showed you what the mindset of Obi-Wan was like. And I think that's why I loved the first three episodes so much, some more than others. And in this episode, we really didn't get that. So I think that's why a lot of people were frustrated.
When you said that, when he couldn't pull that little block and he had a discussion with her, I think we saw it there.
Yeah, that was a small moment. Nothing too big, but fair enough. That was a smaller moment, but I would have liked a little more. So that was my other complaint about this episode. We just didn't get much progression of Obi-Wan. And, you know, people are complaining because we basically have the backstory to Reva now. Like, she just hasn't straight up said it, but we have all the puzzle pieces to put together a full image. She was taken. She was a youngling in the beginning of the first episode that we saw. During the Jedi Purge, she somehow survived, whether the Empire just took her for interrogation or something else happened. They interrogated her. She clearly gave information that she knew, and then she was tortured and became an Inquisitor. And she has anger towards the Jedi because I guess they didn't come rescue her, like how Obi-Wan rescued Leia, per se. I don't know if she has any specific qualms with Obi-Wan per se, but I think she just hates the Jedi as a whole. Maybe she has something against Obi-Wan personally. We don't know. That could be something. So we basically know Reva's backstory, which is why I don't think we would have a long like reveal about Reva's character. The only reveal that I'm interested in is how she knows Vader's Anakin. And maybe she just simply sees Anakin in the Jedi Temple walking around, and then she puts that together.
Most likely there's going to be some kind of lie told about Obi-Wan to her,
potentially
what revolved around Order 66 or this or that. You know, there'll probably be some kind of lie, and as a child she fell for it, you know what I mean?
I totally agree with the first Okairo. Like, her story is incredibly similar to Trilla's. It's almost beat for beat at this point, other than that we don't know who Reva's master was, and if Reva did have a master, that person is not involved in the story. Besides that, Trilla's story and Reva's story, barring any drastic change in these last two episodes, they are very similar. Which I kind of expected, because when they do...
But what, couldn't that be said for any Inquisitor, though, if you think about it?
No.
I mean,
no, because...
If they were, if they were the kids that came out of Order 66, they're younglings.
I'm talking about the more sympathetic angle that they're going for. None of the Inquisitors and Rebels had that. Was the Grand Inquisitor? No. The Fifth Brother? No. The Seventh Sister?
Was
older. No.
He was a Temple Guard, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. He was a Temple Guard.
And they had an Inquisitor for one more episode, so no. So yeah, they're basically doing a very similar story to Trilla, which I get. I mean, you know, from Lucasfilm's perspective, oh, this character here was done wonderfully, and but it was done in video games. Let's basically do something very similar in live action. So a lot of other people haven't seen that arc before. Okay, I guess that's my belief as to what their approach was.
But I gotta say one thing. Just being a casual gamer, even though I knew this, but it's worrying about live action and movie storylines being too close to a video game one and saying, oh, they're just making this. It's a video game, man. I know there's lots of gamers, but not all Star Wars fans are gamers.
You're right.
I would say a lot of them aren't gamers. I mean, there's a lot of ones that don't even want to watch TV shows. They only watch the movies. I mean,
yeah. But with the importance of canon, I feel like having two similar stories, not only that they're similar, like if this was taking place during like the High Republic and we had a character who felt like this and this is why she turned to the dark side, sure. But it's the fact that they're both Inquisitors and they're beat for beat almost the same person. And I mean, Kyra's hitting these opinions like a motherfucker. This is kind of what summarizes a lot of my issue with the series is because of Reva and Leia and Ben, you have all these stories in a 6-episode series that just really kind of almost overwhelm each other.
I disagree.
And that was my issue. That's just because for me, like the way I look at this is like I wanted this to semi be a character study of Kenobi, seeing why he's the man he is now. And we got that in the first episode for sure. We even got a little bit of the third episode. But you didn't. What did you get from that in the second one? Like, what did he reflect on in the second one? Other than, oh, it's been a minute since I've used the Force, and I got to rescue Leia. That's why, like, I think I agree with the Kyra about the pacing. Is that the first episode and the third episode are kind of the reflections of Kenobi? It's him, in my opinion, really progressing the story. The second and fourth one are rescue missions, and I really don't feel like we get anything of substance from Kenobi or anything like that. This show just feels oddly structured to me, and it's it hasn't grown on me yet. And maybe that's my issue, and maybe that's just me being nitpicky and expecting more from this series than what we're getting. But with Reva, it's like, okay, I have to focus on her and Leia's character developments, and Leia not so much, but Reva, you really do. And she's also battling – it's like she's battling for a spotlight against Kenobi, but she's also battling against the main villains, which – was the Grand Inquisitor for the first two episodes, and now Vader. And even Vader is slightly off to me. Like when he came in and started choking her as like a punishment, I didn't like it. I really thought it felt out of it.
I
felt like Vader was like almost.
I was nerdgasming.
Like, his lines, I just didn't know. I can't remember the first thing he said, but the first thing he said, I was like, really? Vader would say that? And his voice is drastically different even from Rogue One. Yes, because he's angry.
He's yelling.
James Earl Jones! What are you talking
about? It sounds way better here than it did in Rogue One.
It does sound better than it did in Rogue One, but is inconsistent with A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Rogue One, and now.
Oh, hold on now. Hold on now. A New Hope is 9 years after him being still Lord Vader, and him that's you know,
what the fuck's his voice?
They get older.
No, okay. This is how I see it. For one, you don't really see Vader scream all that much in the original trilogy. Like the only time you really hear him raise his voice, other than occasional wah, is when he's like, "Captain, tear the ship apart and find those plans. I want them alive." Like besides that, he doesn't really raise his voice that much throughout the whole trilogy. So I guess naturally just seeing him yell, seeing Darth Vader yell is not something we're particularly used to. But to me, maybe this is just the way I see it, it's kind of a little bit of a blend of Anakin and the calm Vader we see in the originals. Because I still get a little bit of that, I don't know if recklessness is the right word, but he's a lot more emotional in this. When he had his conversation with Obi-Wan, you know, he was talking a lot, you know, he's sharing like, you could feel a lot of the anger, but it was a little more of the uncontrolled anger that we saw in Anakin compared to the Vader from the original trilogy where he's a lot more calm. So to me, it seems like it's a bit of a balance that I still see a little bit of Anakin in this Vader as opposed to the original trilogy Vader. I don't see any Anakin in that.
Yeah. Which I like. And when we get to a New Hope, that's the Empire at their pinnacle of power. Mm-hmm. And the chasing of Jedi is pretty much gone to the wayside at this point because they pretty much figured they got them all. There's not really much of it going on as there was at this period of time. And his biggest issues was dealing with, you know, Tarkin and Imperial officers that were mouthy. That was his, you know, his biggest issue, and his obviously thing with Palpatine still that he was struggling with, being his apprentice still, or his, whatever you want to go. They don't call it. Yeah. Apprentice, still apprentice. Sith call it apprentice. There is one other part that annoyed me when Reva was talking to her and trying to read her mind. It felt like a parallel to Kylo and Rey, when he was trying to read her mind, or trying to draw the information out. Now, I don't know if it was either she realized Leia was force sensitive and at the moment put that aside because she needed to get the information, or if she just didn't even realize it. And either way, I think that's if she's going to try to read her mind, at this point, I would think she would have to realize she's a force sensitive. And if she is, that's a big deal.
That's a good point.
They're inquisitors. that's a big deal.
Maybe that's something she'll pick up on.
Well, and I think one argument could be made is that Leia's, well, shit, I can't. I was going to make the argument that maybe she's not as in tune with the Force as we would think. But I mean, if you look at the original trilogy, that would make sense. Even her being Luke's sister, because it's like, oh, just because you're apart from the Skywalker lineage doesn't make you a powerful Force user. But thanks to the shitty sequels, you have to be related to somebody in order to be powerful in the Force. Thanks a lot, J.J. Abrams. So she becomes a Jedi, which is fine, but you would expect Trilla at bare minimum to be like, wait a minute, this kid's got some fucking Force abilities. And we don't see that. I feel like even Obi-Wan should have or has kind of already picked up a little bit about that from Leia. Maybe I'm wrong.
First, for one, I feel like just because you can resist a mind probe, that doesn't necessarily mean you're automatically stronger with the Force. To me, at least, doing the mind probe is very similar to what a Jedi mind trick is. Because a Jedi mind trick, the way it's described in some of the books or whatever, especially in the novelizations and some of the movies, is that you basically enter their mind and you kind of just tell them what to do and they do it. A mind probe is you enter their mind and just see what's in there. And we've seen plenty of non-Force sensitive characters resist Jedi mind tricks before. So,
but they're like resistant to the Force, like Todarians and Hutts. But those are races that are like resistant to
we've
the Force.
We've seen humans before resist Jedi mind tricks, haven't we?
Yeah, you have to be very strong.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some.
So then it's a little different here than in The Force Awakens. Because in The Force Awakens, Rey actively read his mind back. So that's like the red flags. Oh, she's strong with the Force. Leia didn't do that to Reva. So that's how I see it. Also, another thing,
but
this is a problem in The Force Awakens too, where certain characters, mostly Kylo and Reva, they only do the mind probe when it's convenient for the story. Like, so in The Force Awakens, right? When when he's talking to Poe in the very beginning of the movie, he's like, oh, he knows where the droid is. Let's take him back to my ship so I can interrogate him. Why not just interrogate Poe on the spot and find out what you did with the map to Luke? And here,
maybe
it's like
takes a lot out of him. That stamina bar has got to recharge.
Reva mind probed Kumail Nanjiani's character just right on the spot, but she couldn't do that to Tala right when she was suspecting her of potentially lying. So I was like, oh,
consent.
You know,
if she was part of the Empire, you know, she can't be breaking those consent guys.
She's an inquisitor. She has authority. So that's just another thing. It's like, okay, so they only are allowed to interrogate people when it's convenient for the story. So that's just another little thing I noticed.
So I mean, it's like when we explain these things, it's what pulls me out of suspending disbelief and what doesn't.
Yes.
Some of, you know, like that thing. Yeah, that's a pet peeve if you're looking at it purely just thematically, like not, you know, suspending disbelief and just trying to look at it, you know, as a student of film or analyzing films. Yes, you're right. It's a convenience thing. And that's, that happens in a lot of movies and a lot of it happens a lot in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. But if I can, in my head, with the Force and what I know about it and watching all this stuff, rationalize it, that suspends my disbelief. For me, it was hard to rationalize why she didn't realize that she was a Force sensitive.
That's fair.
As being an inquisitor, that's literally their job, is to find Force sensitives.
I agree.
So that one really pulled me out, and where other ones might not have, which, I mean, you're right on everything you said about, you know, some other parts of, but they didn't seem to pull me out as much as this one did.
Mm-hmm. And that's the subjectivity of film.
Yeah.
Do certain moments pull you out as much as others?
I feel like episodes 1 and 3, as I've mentioned, I feel like they build into something. The ending of this one kind of built into something, but someone even made a comment about like how Kathleen Kennedy said that this is going to be the rematch of the century, but doesn't feel any crazy build up to the show that'll lead to that big fight. I
think just lead up
that.
You dragged them through fire.
You'd have to be on serious drugs to think they're not going to fight each other again.
Oh no, I know they will, and I don't think it'll happen in the next episode. I think it'll happen in episode 6. But what makes me even more curious about like everything going forward is now that there's talks that there is going to be a second season, according to Making Star Wars.
I'm worried about that.
Yeah, this makes me concerned because here's kind of what they put is that according to the report, and I'm reading this from Best Bid Bulletin, so shout out to him, the final scenes in Kenobi episode 6 have been cut or amended to accommodate the second season. And spoiler alert for anyone who doesn't want to know the ending, we kind of talked about Reva and whatnot. The initial plot.
If it's actually leaks, I don't think you should discuss it. I think we should just leave it at potentially change the ending.
All right, fine. But they're just saying that the based on the plot leaks of episode 6, things have been changed from those reports, and they have amended the ending of episode 6 for this season to accommodate a second season. And that would make sense if there's a big change. But what do you guys think about a potential second season? Because I will say, as someone who is feeling underwhelmed by season 1, I feel like it's because I want more of Kenobi himself. Two of these episodes have felt like kind of a side adventure, like you'd get in The Mandalorian, and then 2 of them have felt very good for plot. And I like episodes 1 and 3 because of the relationship between Kenobi, Anakin, Darth Vader, and him as a Force user and as a Jedi reflecting on his past. I dislike 2 and 4 because it doesn't feel like that. It feels more focused on Reva or Leia and, you know, saving someone on like some side adventure. So do you guys think a second season would do the series justice, do the story justice? Is this something that you would want so far?
When we first started talking about Kenobi and all the shows we've done talking about Kenobi last year or whatever to build, I was saying back then, not knowing what this is about, not knowing anything, not having seen it like I have now, I'm like, 1 season. That's all this needs. It does not need more than 1 season. Unless they have so much to tell in this little story that it requires 2 seasons, fine. But for what I'm seeing so far, this story is going to have an end, and a second season is going to be something else going on. So back then I said it didn't. So even now, liking what I'm seeing does not need a second season. And I think it's going to do it a disservice, honestly, if they do a second season. It has they have to fucking wow me to be okay with the second season. And I don't see that happening.
Well, that's where like my issues with this series is stemming from, of like Akira was saying, of this kind of feels like based around some cool moments rather than actual story. And so for me, let's say half of this series is kind of like fun adventure and half of it is actual story development. I think another season could add to the story that I actually genuinely would care about, but it goes back to kind of what Lungo was saying of like, you know, you could contain all of the story, the essential stuff into 1 season. A second season, you're getting on the line of milking it. And then it's like, why did you make, if they decided to do a second season based off of the amazing numbers that they're doing from this first one, that's not an incentive of doing it from story. That's, oh, this is popular, let's keep this going.
That's, I do not want that. Decision.
Exactly. And that's what I'm fearful of for a second one, because do we all want more Ewan? Yes. Do we all want more Kenobi versus, you know, the forces of the world and the Empire? Yes. But at the end of the day, what made me interested in the series is him being by himself on Tatooine, trying to become one with the Force, learn from Qui-Gon how to do all that stuff.
I don't want to watch another whole episode of him, nothing but Tatooine. We said there's a Tatooine problem in Star Wars. I do not need an entire season of another series of him on Tatooine, dude. Enough with Tatooine.
That's what the expectation was from Kenobi. Like, I understand the annoyance of Tatooine.
No, was it?
Yes, it was.
Once they announced that Vader would be in this, that just went out the window.
Okay, yes. But
I said at some point early on, I'm like, they're definitely going to go off-world. He's going to have a reason to have to go off-world. We've talked about it on the show. And again, we're talking like a year ago. We had no leaks, no nothing. All we had was like the words. That's all we knew. They're gonna find a reason for him to go off world somehow, and that's what happened.
Yeah, but do you want him to do that again in the second season?
No, I don't want a second season.
I don't want a second season. Period.
Okay, yeah, so.
So let me give my thoughts. And this has me. I am baffled by how many people want a second season of the show. If what you said is true, that they had a story, and they changed the ending so they can tell another story. That is awful. That is the definition of dragging something out. If they already had like one story and this was going to be the first half and the second season was going to be the second half, still not preferred, but I'm not totally against it. But simply just dragging the story out, I hate that. Because, that is a corporate decision. You're basically saying, oh, we just want more Obi-Wan because we know he's popular and he'll bring in more money. And that's just a philosophy. Reminds me of stuff they did with The Rise of Skywalker. And that infuriates me. So no, I do not like that at all. And just conceptually, even if this season is one contained story and they do a second season that's its own story, I just think it takes away from the story that Obi-Wan's supposed to be going on between or after Revenge of the Sith. Like, at first, I was even hesitant that we'd have one season of this show that Obi-Wan would have to leave Tatooine and do something. Now, I think the reason they provided was very good. Leia is just as important as Luke, so Obi-Wan would have to go save Leia. And it's not like Luke's in any active danger. So I think it's a well risk that Obi-Wan could take a few days off to go find Leia. I think that works. What else could there be to keep Obi-Wan, to get Obi-Wan to leave Tatooine again? It's either that he leaves Tatooine again for a reason that's probably not great, or he stays on Tatooine, which is probably going to be really boring, especially after this season. Because this season's probably going to be about him finding the Force again, maybe finding hope again. He's probably going to talk to Qui-Gon. So, like, what's the second season going to be about? What is he going to struggle with in the second season, especially if he stays on Tatooine? They've missed their opportunity to tell a story about Obi-Wan and Tatooine, unless they do it before season one. Because Obi-Wan's probably going to overcome those struggles about the PTSD, his guilt about what happened with Anakin. I'm assuming he's going to overcome that. He's going to be a bit more of a hopeful man by the end of the series. So they've kind of missed their opportunity there. So no, I just, as a second season, it's like Obi-Wan shouldn't be doing much. That's kind of the tragedy of it.
Yeah.
He was living the life of a Jedi, and because of his mistakes and other people's mistakes, he now has to live on this planet by himself as a hermit and protect Luke. And it goes back to what I love in Rebels, when the only episode that Obi-Wan was there. Like, the second that Obi-Wan thought that Darth Maul was going to threaten someone, because Darth Maul's like, maybe you're here to protect someone. The first thing Obi-Wan did was turn on his lightsaber. He's like...
You just realized what season two could be.
What about Maul?
It could be that whole live-action Maul thing. Yes.
That whole story longa is 100% just from Maul's perspective. That season is all about Maul trying to find Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan's just there. He's like, oh, Maul just showed up. Let me fight him. What is there to tell from Obi-Wan's story? He's not actively searching out Maul. Maul just shows up and he's like, oh.
Didn't get a lot of perspective from him doesn't mean that there wasn't
That's not what happens. Obi-Wan's in hiding. Maul finds him. Obi-Wan kills him. It's not like Obi-Wan's avoiding Darth Maul at different turns. Like, Maul shows up once.
I felt like Maul would be, I can't say Maul would be good closure for Obi-Wan. It's clearly Darth Vader that's the main thing in his life that he has to fight and go against. But like, what I really wanted from season one, or just the story in general, is what I feel like episode three clearly hinted into, which is you're going into exile and you're going to be training to become one with the Force, like Yoda and like Qui-Gon did. And Qui-Gon didn't finish his training, but you know, whatever Yoda did, I really thought like that would be a very, because we haven't really explored the Force or anything like that in this series at all, which fine, you don't need to, but I feel like with Obi-Wan,
about
him. Yeah, I was going to say,
we don't want a whole series, but I'm not saying that. But I mean, shit, like, give me an episode or two. If I can have two episodes about rescue missions, I think I can get some serious stuff about the Force every now
and then. He's struggling with it. That's the whole point. We saw him multiple times trying, but not being able to.
You're right, but that could be part of the training. I mean, if we're doing a season two, maybe that's the route they go. But this feels like they're putting so much into the Kenobi series where it doesn't feel focused or centered on Kenobi. It feels like he's got to go to the enforced fortress with the Inquisitors, and then there's the Inquisitors, and there's 3, 4, 5 of them that you got to meet and do. And have you seen Rebels? So well, if you haven't, here we go.
Do I gotta pull up my spreadsheet of Obi-Wan FaceTime again?
Maybe not so much in this episode, but for the first three episodes, the focus is like 80% on Obi-Wan
of screen time.
We get a few scenes of Reva development in the first three episodes, a few, and it's almost entirely about Obi-Wan. And Leia's not really even like a character. She doesn't have a character arc. She doesn't really have a story. She's not a MacGuffin per se, but she's just there to help Obi-Wan learn more about himself. That's really what she's there for. So it's not like we had some time with Leia in chapter one. But then since then, like every time there's something important happening to Leia, Obi-Wan's there. I guess besides Reva interrogating her.
Oh, yeah. She's his call to action. She's the plot device of Leia's captured. We've got to go save her. I mean, like you said in the first episode, they focus a little bit more on her.
I feel like going into the series, if there's any other character besides Obi-Wan or Vader that got character development, fans would be upset. Yeah. They just wanted to see those two. I just think that's an unfair expectation after the series.
Now, I know it was over movies, but I gotta comment this because you brought it up, Star Wars only, and Dan's over here saying, seriously, you guys don't have a problem with they get captured and rescued twice. How many times was Han Solo captured in the original trilogy?
What?
Once?
Twice?
No, twice.
When? I'm not complaining about it.
He was captured in Empire Strikes Back, and then he gets rescued in Return of the Jedi. And then he gets captured by the Ewoks, maybe? I mean...
You could argue in the first Star Wars that they were technically captured.
Oh, yeah, the tractor beam thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
They was captured. They were captured twice, okay? And he flew out with the garbage and stuff. I mean... things like this happen, you know what I mean? So I mean, maybe it's different because it's in a series and so close together, so it's more glaring. Mm-hmm. You know, but it doesn't, I still don't think, I mean, could they have done a better job perhaps with a different thing? Sure. I'm not saying this is the most optimal thing they could have gone with, but it's not, I don't think it's horrible. I don't think it doesn't take me out of it. I don't think it ruins the story for me.
I agree.
Leia's the bait, literally. She realizes this. And after the first time, she knows that she's definitely the bait.
No, Leia doesn't do any disservice to the series for me. I really thought she would. But if anything, she's made this better. I keep praising episodes 1 and 3, but what I loved about episode 3 was just her and him on the, the truck. I'll just call it a big truck. When they were on that moving truck. And sitting with the stormtroopers, like those are the scenes I genuinely enjoy. Or how like Kenobi's like losing his shit. He's like, "There's nobody here. We gotta get the fuck out of here." And she's like, "Wait, why don't you calm down for a second? Maybe they're gonna show up and you know, chill and everything." And he doesn't like. I like Leia in the series. I just at the same time, Kylo's just reading my mind. I do feel like maybe I have false expectations on half this shit, and that's why I'm always disappointed. But it just felt like. With Kenobi, as impactful as he is into the entire world of Star Wars, when he clearly has like a goal in this exile, and we're not even remotely touching on it, not even a reference to it. He has asked for Qui-Gon's help, but he has had no training on what
the first 10 years was depression. The next 9 years is his growth spiritually. That is not a hard concept. That is very easy. I'm not saying
it's a hard concept, but Jesus, exactly in the middle. Can I see the fucking spiritual progression? Can I see him become one with the Force? And now you're telling me I got 2 episodes to see it?
Oh, my God. We're seeing him kind of come back and trust in the Force again. I mean, he clearly cut himself off for probably 10 years. And he's opening up to it again.
Yeah, hold on a second. You put that up. Hold on. Can we mention that when the Star Wars A New Hope was made, that they still hadn't realized that Leia was going to be Luke's sister. So there was none of that concern. There was none. Does Obi-Wan, when they were making Star Wars, did you know, does Obi-Wan really know who Leia is? That's all stuff that got given to us in the prequels.
You're not wrong. But why do we have to sometimes like adhere to that specifically? And like not, I'm saying why shouldn't we adhere to some of that stuff? Like if we have this, like you made a good point on your stream earlier today, Longo, about how people are upset with him being like, I haven't felt this presence. Vader says I haven't felt the presence since. And he's talking about Kenobi and people are like, well, that should have been Mustafar. But as you said in that stream, it was, I can't remember what the word is for it, but basically like you kind of embed yourself into that idea of like, oh, well then they're talking about Mustafar as opposed to what we see now. And it's kind of constantly changing that. I kind of understand the point.
And of, before like, the prequels, we didn't know when.
Exactly.
they were told us in the original
trilogy, but I do understand the notion of being like, okay, well, like if he wasn't that concerned with it in the original trilogy, but we already know that he, you know, has this experience with her in Kenobi. It just feels a little disjointed, but that's it's not anything that's like the end of the world for me. As time goes on, I feel like we're more accepting of any small minute flaws in continuity with the original trilogy because of the time that it was made. And like Lunga was saying, we had no idea what came before it, no idea what Star Wars was as a concept. So it does make sense, but at the same time, I feel like for the narrative Legends of rewatching books. Yeah, exactly. But I feel like for rewatching the original trilogy, it wouldn't be a bad idea to try to make some of that stuff make a little bit more sense than they have.
I think the only one that kind of bugs me, we talked about this, is that Leia knows Obi-Wan Kenobi is Ben Kenobi. Because now let's think about this. This is not being a sequel shill. Leia named Kylo Ren after Obi-Wan. She didn't just randomly choose Ben. She named her son after Ben Kenobi. So that means Obi-Wan and Ben matter a lot to her. So much so that she named her son Ben. But then, in A New Hope, she just kind of glosses over how much Obi-Wan means to her. And just, granted, all we see is the message. Help me, Obi-Wan.
Is this when we get back into Legends? Well, Ben was actually Luke's son, not Leia's son. We go to the books.
So either way.
That was a choice given by the new Disney creators. They decided to do that.
Yes, yes. But and this is at fault of the Obi-Wan series, that they're aware that they're clearly aware that the name Ben Kenobi means a lot to Leia and Han, because that's what they named the kid after. And you think this is me reaching for straws, but I think this show just helps emphasize why Leia would want to name her son Ben. So then in episode four,
it leads towards what people say is breaking canon of the original trilogy. That's the thing. That's where it becomes a problem. If it strengthens what was done in the sequels, it weakens what we saw in A New Hope.
I don't think so. Leia knowing,
I am the one who pushes back on everyone who says her knowing it's Obi-Wan breaks canon. I'm like, listen, she did a quick message.
It just
I rationalize. I'm like, listen, it doesn't mean it necessarily breaks canon. It could have been a quick message. She could be worried. It could be intercepted. She didn't make it personal. She just, other than you fought with my father in the Clone Wars, she kept it very business. So I mean, I can rationalize it that way. Okay, connect it with the sequels, that it's so important. It weakens that argument.
I don't know how you can't argue that they clearly chose to name Leia's son Ben, and then this series is all about Ben Kenobi saving Leia. I do not see how you can't make those
years of stories being told. There've been more stories after Return of the Jedi before Ben was born. They talked about that a lot and everything he did. Yeah, maybe they got more.
So did Leia name her son after a different Ben?
Talk to someone. Was there someone who knew Ben? Everybody who knew Ben was dead, weren't they? Yeah, everyone knows Ben is dead.
And Leia, I mean, Leia did say, you know, she kind of when Luke rescues her for the first time, she's like, "Oh, Ben Kenobi's here." So she did. She sounded like a little excited, and that was always kind of weird because, you know, that was kind of a plot hole at first. People were like, "How does she know that Obi-Wan is Ben Kenobi?" Because it's never said.
Oh,
to her.
Yeah.
So now maybe this is fixed that plot hole.
But yeah, I could still rationalize the. Yeah.
It
gets a little weak, but I can rationalize it, and it doesn't seem out of bounds to me that it was a quick message. It was an important message. There are stormtroopers coming to get her. She just had to throw it out there, and wanted it to be more business-like.
And let's be real. Like, Star Wars has played loosey-goosey with dialogue all the time. You know, Vader killed your father. Oh, Vader's now your father. Leia's like, I remember my mother when she was very young, but Padme died when Leia was literally born. Tarkin kiss talks about that. That's not really dialogue, but yes, conceptually, yes. Tarkin's like, everyone of your religion is extinct now, but 10 years beforehand, Inquisitors are still alive and well, and people like Leia's taught about the Jedi. The Jedi are still like common knowledge, what they once were. So they've played like, and then now this is new with the stuff when Yoda tells Luke he's the last Jedi, and then, you know, Ahsoka's out there, Ezra's out there, which I know Star Wars only hates, but that's another thing.
Fucking annoying.
So it's like,
I said it from the beginning, even when Lucas was running things, it's canon until it's not. That's how
Star Wars is. Don't tell me it means something and then it doesn't.
But these lines of dialogue aren't like supposed to be super impactful. Like when and then I guess another thing is now when Vader says, I haven't felt your presence since, it's going to be whatever happens at the end of this series. And then, you know, Vader did say, when I left you, I was but the learner. Now I'm the master. He didn't say, when I last saw you, I was but the learner. Now I'm the master. So,
right. And cool, to be fair, you know, I mean, come on, Star Wars only. You study this stuff and you want to get in the same kind of field. You know, when Lucas wrote those lines, it was a blurb to just establish that there was a relationship. That's all it was.
Yes.
That there was a relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin. That's what it was. He wasn't thinking deeper. I mean, he tries to pretend in retrospect that, here, I had 9 episodes. I had the whole thing planned out. Yeah, that's why Empire was completely changed, right? They had to, like, lock you in a room and change it so you didn't fuck the movie up. No. You know, let's be honest about it. That it was just a line of dialogue in a movie that he was making in the 70s that he thought wasn't going to do much better than his other movies.
You know, well, Michael Gonzalez says, there's another good point. Vader didn't technically leave Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan left Vader. So there's another one.
Yeah, I think we'll have that like almost revelation in this series where like Obi-Wan and Vader fight, and then maybe Vader like does leave him where he's like, you know, I left you, I was about the learner, now I'm the master. That'd be kind of cool to see.
And here's another one. When Obi-Wan said he hasn't heard the name Obi-Wan since before Luke was born. That's not the case anymore.
Jeez, yeah, fuck.
So it's like,
okay. Not care.
So there's just so many things. And then when Obi-Wan doesn't know who R2 is, it's like, okay, Obi-Wan was lying to Luke that he didn't recognize R2. Like, BS. Obi-Wan very well knows who R2 is. R2 was Anakin's best friend. So,
yeah.
There's a bunch of things. It's like,
who gives less of a fuck about continuity in canon? George Lucas or Lucasfilm right now?
No, George Lucas, believe it or not.
I would go.
How does he decide to put in, C-3PO? Sure, Anakin built him. And it was like nothing. Like, Anakin doesn't give a fuck about this robot who he cared about so much as a little kid. Mm-hmm. Just completely ignored everywhere else.
Is it ever explained why R2 doesn't fill in Luke on any backstory of what happened in the prequels? He spends three years with Luke before The Empire Strikes Back. R2 just never said anything. He's just like, this is Anakin's son. I guess I won't say anything. So it's just like, there's a lot of things, yes, that are
R2 keeps things close to the chest. And things are on a need-to-know basis that you didn't need to know.
R2's like, hey, if I told Luke when he was a kid that, you know, hey, your father is this bastard that keeps killing people across the galaxy, I mean, what the fuck is he going to do with that information?
I don't know.
What's it going to change?
What if Baal talked to him and said, listen, you can't talk to anyone about this stuff. It's a secret.
Bullshit. R2 does whatever he wants.
I was about to say, like, R2's going to like fucking stick out his little dick thing and shake his hand about that. All
right. Shake my dick, fucker.
So there's certain lines of dialogue that mean more than others, yes. But I don't think they've done anything yet that was too like drastic. The biggest line of dialogue that they retconned was Obi-Wan saying Vader killed Luke's father, and they turned that into the best plot twist in the history of cinema. So
right, and it's what I don't think Star Wars would be what it was if they didn't do that.
Absolutely, because in episode 4,
it would have been like Flash Gordon. It would have been a flash in a pan.
We see Star Wars as kind of tells the story of the importance of family. In just episode 4, you don't really get that. Episode 5 made it about family because it's about the redemption of fathers and all that. So I'm not saying I'm encouraging Lucasfilm and George Lucas to retcon their own dialogue and just not care about certain things that characters said years ago. But it's, there's no hard retcons here. It's not like Leia said, oh, I have two sons, and then in the sequels you only see one and they never address what happened to the second son. There's nothing serious like that. It's just like little lines like, okay, I guess it now is from this perspective instead of this perspective.
It's yeah, it's a line that has a lot of it? It's, it has a lot of them are open-ended and a lot of them like you said, perspective can doesn't kill the line. It's just the perspective that changes.
And again, not ideal, but I'm not going to lose sleep over it.
It messes headcanon.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about Mustafar, right? Like, we, because Lucas made the original trilogy, I haven't felt this since. And then we saw the fight on Mustafar, right? Which was in novelizations. They've talked in dictionaries, they talked about the fight they had on Mustafar. So before he even made the prequels, we saw that. And headcanon goes, that's what he meant. Of course, Lucas is tying it together. That's, Lucas never said that. They never, you know, addressed that directly. It's implied, but what does implying do? It's headcanon.
Yeah, but it's not a big deal. Like, it's not, is it really the end of the world that
I'm talking about for the people who make it a big deal?
I know, I'm talking to them, not you. Just like, is it really that big of a deal? Gotcha. Now, I want to go, I need to go on one last mini rant, because it's kind of the same thing, but it's not so much about dialogue. It's that in the original trilogy, there was no mention of a chosen one. So then when the prequels happened, they added extra weight to the events of Return of the Jedi. That, oh, Vader fulfilled the prophecy of the Chosen One, even though in the original trilogy it's never mentioned. So then come Rise of Skywalker, people are saying Return of the Jedi was ruined because Vader no longer fulfilled the Chosen One prophecy, even though in Return of the Jedi the Chosen One prophecy is never mentioned. So it's like other stories are adding context to previous stories.
And but you don't Lucas like made all the first six, so that's what matters. Don't you understand? He made all six, and he had a plan for the next three movies. So, yeah, you know. The microbiotic universe.
That was my main rant. It's a
quantum realm, Ant-Man. We're gonna
Speaking of bad plans and shit that never comes to fruition, what the hell's going on with the next Star Wars movie? So odd. We have we didn't have anything about it at Star Wars Celebration. We only get it from these interviews. Kathleen Kennedy did one with was it Total Film or is it GamesRadar.com? I think they did.
Are these Vanity Fair interviews?
Well, no. That was a week before Celebration. This shit happened.
Thirteen
days ago. Yeah. She did a lot of interviews. So it's from Total Film. They say Star Wars Celebration has led to some very exciting news, but I would say there's a curious talk I would say there was a curious lack of talk about the movies. There were reports that the next movie will now be Taika Waititi's film. Is that correct? Kathleen Kennedy says that's correct. The next Star Wars film is going to be Taika Waititi's. And they say, is that aiming for 2023? She said, yeah, well, not 2023, but late 2023. And then they say the December 2023.
Don't be surprised if we push it.
Exactly. And she says, when they say, they ask her, is it the 2023 in December? And she's like, we haven't locked anything in.
Yeah.
That's kind of odd. And so then they go on and ask, they said the future of the film, the future of the movies is still in movement. And so she says, of course, they've been in movement all along. We leave the saga. We have all the great, exciting work happening on the television side that informs us much about where we're going. We want to be very intentional about that, and we have great talent that we're working with, people who care deeply about what she get to the point, Kathy. Movie theaters can come back. They want to come back with a bang, and that's important for us. And they say, do you think it's a hesitancy, perhaps, in exploring the past Skywalker saga? She said, no hesitancy. And they say, so that's on your mind? She's like, yeah, we need to create a whole new saga. That takes a lot. There's a lot of conversation around that. Fuck off. she had her moment. She had three movies. We can move on. But what do you guys think about this? Not only is the next movie Taika's, it's coming out next year, apparently.
Did you hear the title leaked? You didn't hear the title leaked of Taika's.
Pray tell.
Yeah, it's Star Wars Love and Lightsabers. This movie. I kind of felt this was going to happen. Especially after the Rogue Squadron thing, the only thing they had slated, and no, I'm not going to list, even though she said, oh yeah, we're still talking to Rian Johnson. Fuck that noise. The only thing they really had slated was Taika's, right? And those rumors of a Feige thing and rumors of Rian Johnson's still thing being out there. So once Patty's fell off, I'm like, oh yeah, Taika's is going to be the one. Realm and Thunder's coming out this year. it's going to be Tyka. So that doesn't surprise me. But like when you were saying, we're talking about not 2023, but late 2023, that means, oh, if we're not sure what we're doing yet, that's going to be, it could be spring 2024.
I'm just shocked about like the production aspect of it, because when all this shit went down with Rogue Squadron, remember all like, I'm talking like a lot of leakers and scoopers and stuff. They were all saying, hey, no, there's an Old Republic movie in the works now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that Tyka's, which wouldn't surprise me, but at the same time kind of would. And at the same time, like Tyka has been saying that they've just been writing and writing and writing their movie. I haven't heard anything about their script being finished since he said we're just writing. So maybe it is, which is fine.
Didn't they say Tyka's is supposed to be sequel era?
She said they were kind of looking at that.
They say they were looking at sequel stuff, but also that Tyka's would be like, remember when they announced it? Like it would be something new and like exploring or something like that. It was just going to be different than what we're used to, which cool. But at the same time, I really thought what the way I thought about it was, okay, Rogue Squadron's 2023. They're working on Tyka's script, which is great because it doesn't come out till 2025, likely at the earliest. So that would give them a lot of time to refine the script. If they're moving his movie up 2 years, which I really thought would be hard to do because, I mean, 2023, the end of it is fucking next year. That's the end of next year.
It's around the corner. It's not going to happen.
It's not. No, I don't think 2023 is going to
happen. I mean, does he have anything else slated? Yes. Love and Thunder's done. Okay. All he's got to do is the press stuff and everything for Love and Thunder.
But
so
I feel like, I was going to say, that would
definitely be. Working hard on the script now.
But it takes more than. People realize the Rise of Skywalker felt like a rushed movie, and J.J. Abrams started working on that script, or they started filming the movie a little less than 2 years beforehand. We haven't even had an announcement of what this movie is.
So it was a year ago that he was working on the script already. So I think there's been a lot of back and forth.
But he's been in the middle of making a movie. So Thor Love and Thunder comes out July 8th. That is literally a month from now. So it is feasible that when that comes out, or even the week before it comes out, he immediately, but he's going to do a fucking premiere for it. So he's going to be busy with that pretty much until July 8th. After that, he can go to production. But you're telling me, like, production's like a year normally. So a year of production, and they finish production and shooting, let's say, by next summer. That gives them time to edit and do all the post-production stuff, but even that's going to take time. If this does come out, I said
late 2023 means maybe we can push it.
I think March. I think a May 2024 release would not be surprising, because if they rush this fucking movie as well, oh, God help Lucasfilm. Want to start these movies on the right foot.
How long ago was it announced that Tyka was going to be on? Was it almost 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, but he's been actively working on other stuff.
Hold on. I know. It was 2 years ago that he was announced, okay? I'm sure he's had phone conference meetings talking about spitballing ideas. Those only take an hour. He can do those. You know what I mean? An hour, 2 hour phone conference once a month or something where they're spitballing ideas. Then he wrote up like a quick outline here or there. Writers can write outlines really quickly. Let's not be fooled. They can write that shit up really quickly, okay? Mm-hmm. And now I would say in this last year, he has talked about how he's been actively working on the script while working on Thor Love and Thunder. So there's been work on the script and ideas. So I think what I'm saying is that there's been a lot of probably talking and spitballing about this for the last 2 years already. So I think there's been a lot of heavy planning with Tyka and Lucasfilm already at that point. Now it's just the nuts and bolts of finalizing the script. So that's why I don't think it'd be rushed at that point. Because just, you know, when we talk about Force Awakens, that was different. It was like, we don't have directors, we don't have actors, we don't have a script. Find people, I want this in a year. You know, I mean, it was really quick. I know I'm exaggerating the time frame, but it was really quick. Not like this. There wasn't enough planning stage with Force Awakens.
So I will say what concerns me as well is I'm going back to Bespin Bulletin because he normally has really good stuff on like production stuff. He says it's also worth noting that Tyka still has a busy year ahead of him. Soon he'll begin the promotional campaign for Marvel Studios' Thor: Love and Thunder, which releases next month, before he sets off to New Zealand to begin filming on the Time Bandit series for Apple TV, starring Peter Dinklage, which starring Peter Dinklage this August, which films until early 2023. Weird writing. Waititi serving as director of the pilot of Time Bandit series, as well as co-writer and executive producer before the years. And Waititi will also be promoting the new film, Next Goal Wins, which is slated to release later this year, premiere at the BFI Festival this October. He says, though I'm excited to see Waititi's film, I do find it highly unlikely the project will begin filming this year and hit late 2023 release window that Kathleen spoke of. He says he's not holding his breath for anything sooner than 2024 release date at the earliest. Yet again, that is fine, but it goes back to Lucasfilm stepping on, like, they cannot, it is impossible for them to not shoot themselves in the foot on every fucking step of the way. And that's where things like this do, they're not even annoying. It's pathetic at this point, in my opinion, where it's just like, get your shit together.
I don't get why you guys are surprised that they didn't say anything about the movies at Celebration. Let's be real. Kathleen Kennedy, she's probably well aware of her reputation about directors leaving projects and movies being delayed. I bet you she's terrified of making announcements. She's probably terrified of making announcements. She doesn't want to make an announcement unless she's absolutely sure now. Even when she is sure, there's probably going to be a change. So
But my issue with that is that she was – We heard of it from Vanity Fair, maybe it was Variety and The Hollywood Reporter. Back when she got rid of the guys from Game of Thrones, people really close to her, and I myself can confirm this, is she highly disliked the notion that they keep firing and churning out directors nonstop. I have not seen anything since that, and this was in 2019, to sway me and think that they've actually learned from this stuff, especially if this report is true of – we understood the delay from 2022 to 2023. COVID happened. You can't do a Star Wars movie. Creative differences happened with the Rogue Squadron movie. And, you know, that stuff, absolutely annoying and fucking awful. But then we do this again with this Taika movie where it's not just like, oh, we're delaying it or anything like that. But it's like you're trying to move it up to the next film, but you're also going to have to not hit your 2023 release date, which is fine. You don't have to hit that anymore. But please don't rush this Taika movie. These movies are so important and essential to Star Wars as a brand. The Star Wars movies coming out, I feel like, should be more important than the Marvel movies when they come out. Like, Spider-Man No Way Home was such a big culture event for us here in America. I want Star Wars to be like that. And it wasn't like that with Solo, and it wasn't like that with Rise of Skywalker. When they come back with these new Star Wars movies, they need to do that again. And I feel like trying to get one out sooner than it was intended, or delaying another one and doing even something like Rogue Squadron, which we don't know anything about, and whatever it is going to be is going to be highly different than what it was originally intended to be. And even if that's given, if it even does come out, if Rogue Squadron even does happen, it just seems like nothing but mess. Yeah, I would be surprised at this point. Lucasfilm consistently is disappointing on the movie size and the production, and it always is the behind the scenes stuff, and it's beating a dead horse. We don't know what's going to change, when it's going to change, but there has to be change.
I blame conjointly Kathleen Kennedy, and I'm still sticking with it. This is my hill I'm going to die on, just like you Rian Johnson trilogy is going to happen. I think it's Michelle Rejwan, and the reason why I blame Kathleen Kennedy is because Kathleen Kennedy continues to show faith in her and allowing her to make these decisions and going along with them. But I really think it's Michelle Rejwan that's doing this. I just had this
all of it. That, no, she's clearly in the fault for the Rogue all Squadron the problems thing.
Getting in the middle, creative differences, not liking this, not liking that, firing people, hiring people, back and forth. I think it's her.
Dang, you know, I.
Maybe.
And Kathleen Kennedy, now I'm not saying she's absolved because she's her boss. And if Michelle tells her, this is what I'm doing, and she goes, okay, she's going along with it. So she's still culpable.
It is curious that The Force Awakens and The Rise of Skywalker had more production issues than The Last Jedi. And Michelle Rejwan was not the producer of The Last Jedi, to my knowledge. Let me double check that before I fucking put my foot in my mouth.
Because Rian Johnson knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Now the only chink in this was the issues with Kenobi, because Michelle Rejwan has nothing to do with Kenobi, because that's on a TV site.
I thought Michelle Rejwan was in charge of like live action stuff.
Not she just is now. Just as recently, now, she became the live vice president of live action development. So literally anything and everything, shows, movies, she is there for. Which,
yeah, but when that thing happened with the Kenobi filming stopping and they rewrote the whole script, and Kathleen says she hadn't read it yet, I don't think Michelle had anything to do with the shows back then.
Potentially.
All right, let's look
if she, I mean, I mean, for me, it's cool. If she did, that just strengthens my argument. But I'm just trying to be.
Wow. Yeah. So what do you know? She did not executive produce The Last Jedi, but she did Rise of Skywalker, Force Awakens, all of Kenobi, the Light and Magic series that's coming out, and Willow. So, damn, not a good fucking track record.
And Mandalorian, that's successful, she doesn't touch, right?
Oh my god, you're blowing my mind here, Lunga. Yeah, she's not even on the one for that one.
Did she touch the Book of Boba Fett? I guess not.
It did not even mention her. It did not mention her. But I feel like Book of Boba Fett not doing well is a reflection of Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, Robert Rodriguez just
that's not production issues. We're focusing on production issues. Didn't really have a variety of production issues.
Force Awakens didn't really have serious production issues. It's not even in the same conversation as Solo, Rogue One.
It's not in the same conversation. But I will always
say it's a precursor.
There wasn't anything concerning.
It's like tripping over your own foot, and it's like, oh, that's what the Force Awakens. They tripped, and then the Last Jedi, they kind of went on a jog, and then Solo
and they kept walking the same fucked up way.
No, Solo Rise of Skywalker, they fucking fell on their face and just kept doing it. Geez, all right, so we're now the anti Michelle Rejoin group, I guess. We're gonna blame her instead of Kathleen Kennedy.
I mean, hey.
There goes all our media access for the next 10 years.
As long as I get that Ryan Johnson trilogy, I'm happy. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Kara makes a great point. Rogue One had an awful fucking production. Solo had an awful production. And Solo was not even to blame on Michelle Rejoin. That was on Larry Kasdan and Kathleen Kennedy herself. They made the decision.
Well, that wasn't Solo's fault, mostly Lord and Miller's, because they supposedly went off script. I would agree with you, Kathleen.
Not off script. It's that they had the Artur thing where they were like, oh, we're going to do a lot of takes. And all that happened truly was that Larry Kasdan and Kathleen Kennedy did not like the way they were making the film. They thought they were taking too long on certain shots and scenes. And Kathleen Kennedy said it. There is a process to this that they just weren't matching.
The process sucks.
That's what I'm saying, is that they have a history of this stuff. It's like, if you do not line up with the way we want things done, then we're going to have issues. And this is what surprises me, what I kind of like about what they've done with Rick Famuyiwa and Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, is these guys, I guess they're doing the process fine, but they're getting more creative freedom as time goes on to do their own thing. They are proving themselves by sticking within the process of making this, but the creative aspect they're doing on their own. I mean, even the Game of Thrones guys, David Benioff D.B. Weiss, they didn't stick to the process. They wanted to go against the grain because they were like, oh, we're going to make it the trilogy. Scripts aren't really that done yet, and we're not really in the mood for doing Star Wars right now. Oh, my God. Here we go. Already.
That was from last year. That was from November last year when I made that stream.
My God. And then Colin Trevorrow, yet again, I don't know if it was the process with him or if it was the script. I think it was the script mostly. But him getting fired fucked up everything with Rise of Skywalker. Oh man, if you could get a time machine.
Every movie production besides The Last Jedi had problems.
Yep. And the only problems Last Jedi had was a delay for script rewrites. And even that wasn't that big of a deal.
We disagree on this. I think that was a strategic move, but
I don't think it was a strategic move. I just think it's you like the movie and I dislike the movie. So something like that, I'm like,
Kathleen had such a love affair with Ryan that she told Michelle, stay the fuck away, leave him alone, let him do his thing.
I think that they saw how successful The Force Awakens was in December. So okay, let's move Last Jedi to December. Because Last Jedi was...
It was literally script rewrites, because after Force Awakens came out, or maybe before, Ryan Johnson wanted to add in more. Yeah, well, I think it was the deciding factor of it. I think it being in December was just like a happenstance, because I think what would have happened is you have 2015, Force Awakens in December, 2016, Rogue One in December, and then it was planned for May 2017 to have because they delayed the. This is why I disagree about them delaying it specifically for the December release date, because even before that, even after The Last Jedi came out, the plan was still to have Episode 9 release in May of 2019, not December. So I thought The Force Awakens would be a December thing, Rogue One would be a December thing, and then 6 months later to get The Rise of Skywalker, 6 months later to get the Episode 8, Last Jedi, And then a year later, you would get Solo Star Wars Story. A year later, you would get Episode 9.
Okay. But this is a topic for another day. It's not too crucial. It's
beyond confusing at this point. But
you see Ryan Johnson back. The evidence is there.
I'm losing faith with that one too. But that's our movie talk for the day. Thank you guys for coming in the chat to me. That's about all the time we have. Next week, catch us for another episode of Kenobi and seeing how things go with that. And
I'm optimistic.
Did you guys talk about the Bad Batch or Andor thing when I was out during Celebration?
Andor, we did not Andor. Bad Batch. Because the Bad Batch trailer hasn't come out. And even if we did, what would we say? Looks. We don't like the show. We're not too excited for it. There's nothing in the trailer that piqued our interest.
That's stuff to go over. Well, maybe Omega's new outfit. Maybe we can go over Tales of the Jedi next week. And what else is there? I was going to say Andor, but you guys already touched on that. I still haven't gone over that. So maybe we can do Tales of the Jedi and Jedi Fallen Order or Jedi Survivor next week and then add Kenobi on top of that, if that sounds good to you. And in the chat, of course, once the stream is over, leave a comment of what you want. And last week, we got a very interesting piece of advice about bringing the show back onto the Star Wars Only channel. So we're going to seriously consider that and have discussions about that. So let us know what you guys want. You know, we're here to please. We live to serve. And thank you guys for tuning in. This was a really good Chatooine episode. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. All of our channels are in the links below. Get 15% off your Star Wars books. You know, they're kind of going off the shelves at this point. And if you're going to listen to this on podcast, if you're listening to it right now, please give us a 5-star review. Let us know you love us. Thank you guys for joining. We'll see you all next time, and may the Force be with you always. What?